This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
The Great Depression, a period of devastating economic hardship, began in the United States in 1929, and through its roots were complex. The stock market crash on Black Thursday, October 24th, 1929, served as a grim trigger. It affected everything in life, including sports, and the very essence of football was in jeopardy. But it ended up having a silver lining and turning things around for the NFL and a young club of the New York Football Giants. And in this edition of our NYG 100, we're going to talk about that Great Depression years, and it's all coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to the 16th installment of our celebration of the 100th season of the New York Giants. We're trying to cover all the aspects of the Giants throughout their history that made them the team they are today and helped shape the National Football League, as well as formulating our game that we love to watch. Now, New York City, the nation's financial center, felt the Great Depression's bite particularly hard. The Wall Street was a symbol of prosperity. It witnessed despair. There was bread lines that snaked throughout the city, and shantytowns, nicknamed the Hoovervilles after President Hoover, sprouted up on the fringes of the town. Now, factories stood idle, no smoke coming out of the smokestacks, and nearly a third of all New York residents found themselves without jobs. The city, once a beacon of the Roaring Twenties, became a stark symbol of the Depression's devastation. The Great Depression's arrival in 1929 sent shockwaves throughout American life, and professional sports were not immune to this. Baseball, the national pastime, it felt the pinch most acutely, with a disposable income scarce. Attending games became a luxury that many just couldn't afford. Attendance plummeted, dragging down team revenues. And even superstars like Babe Ruth saw their salaries slashed. The financial strain forced teams to get creative. Minor league systems where young players developed cheaply became even more crucial, and ticket prices, however, remained stubbornly high, and a decision that some argue prolonged the attendance slump. The impact wasn't limited to baseball, though. Boxing, a popular spectator sport, they even saw a decline in big dollar fights. The fledgling National Football League also struggled, with several franchises folding just as the Depression was hitting. What were they going to do? It was over the course of the 1930s, though. The attendance declined for the Major League Baseball and college football, but pro football seemed to increase. It was seen as an inexpensive form of entertainment. Tickets were much cheaper than baseball or the college football games, which were much more popular at the time. So the less popular events, like the NFL, were less expensive. And as many colleges de-emphasized football or canceled their teams completely because of the financial woe, fans turned to the pros, and their fan base increased mightily. The 1929 Giants. Well, the Detroit Wolverines were merged with the New York Giants, staying under the umbrella of the Giants. The move was mainly made because Tim Mara wanted to acquire the rights of quarterback Benny Friedman, who had steadily issued trouble for New York in head-to-head matchups throughout his NFL career with Cleveland and with Detroit. The Giants started out really strong. They had an outstanding 13-1-1 record to end the 1929 season. However, it was only good enough for second place, for the Green Bay Packers completed their campaign of 12-0-1, earning that NFL title. The next year of the Depression, 1930 season, That was a close race between the Pack and the G-Men. Once again, week nine, both sides had excellent records, with Green Bay at 8-0 and without a tie. And New York caught on the heels with a 10-1-0 mark. On November 23rd, they locked horns at the Polo Grounds, and New York, in front of a crowd of 37,000, the Giants emerged victorious by the score of 13-6, setting their record to 11 wins and 2 losses. But after Thanksgiving Day, they lost to Staten Island 7-6, and Green Bay bounced back to improve their record. That autumn of 1930 offered a unique opportunity. After Green Bay came back and ended up winning a second National Football League championship, and the Giants finishing second. Well, there was an opportunity, though, for the Giants to make amends, and they didn't realize what the opportunity was going to do. There was a risk-reward type of situation. It was a unique offer arose as Northwestern University out in Chicago proposed to Notre Dame, who was just the cat's meow of college football throughout the, you know, Newt Rockne was still the coach there, and they were just packing crowds wherever they went. Well, Northwestern offered if they could get 125,000 fans at Soldier Field playing Notre Dame that year, that they would donate $100,000 up front to the Illinois Governor Lewis Lincoln Emerson's unemployment fund, which would help the impoverished during the Depression. Now, this act mirrored efforts nationwide. And in New York City, their mayor, Jimmy Walker, established a similar fund to aid the unemployed in that large town. Hoping to attract the Giants for a charity exhibition game, Walker met with team owner Tim Mara and sports writers to brainstorm a captivating matchup and do some great marketing to try to get people in there to help the impoverished. Public opinion about the pinnacle of football was divided. While the National Football League existed, Notre Dame's dominance over college teams, drawing sellout crowds across the country, left many unconvinced that they were even able to be matched by even a pro team. Remember, the pro circuit was inferior in many people's eyes to the college game. And New York being one of the top teams of the pros, Notre Dame was definitely the top team of college for the last decade. In 1930, the New York Giants finally got to step up and help in that Great Depression by organizing that charity game that Mayor Walker wanted against the legendary Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And it was penciled in for December 13th. Notre Dame, unfortunately, had two late season games, near the end of November and December 6th against Southern Cal, that had national title implications. And Newt Rockne knew his team could play with the Giants, but he was a little bit nervous. They were playing at Southern Cal December 6th. This game was December 13th, 7 days later. Remember, we're in 1930. It's not air travel, it's by train. And after, you know, playing a game as rigorous as that, getting ready for Southern Cal, no matter what the outcome, you're going to be tired and drained. And then you're going to have days and days of travel to get all the way to the other side of the country to New York City. And his team would be exhausted, not prepared to play the Giants. So Rockne had a better plan. He was construed and proposed that he would put together the core of his 1924 Notre Dame Fighting Irish championship team, including the four horsemen, which were Jim Crowley, Don Miller, Elmer Layden, and Harry Stoldreyer, and along with other players of the seven mules of that great team too, and along with some mixture of some other all-stars from some of the other years, but a great team indeed. And these guys were all in their 20s, so they weren't like old men coming to play the Giants. They were about the same age as the professionals on the Giants, maybe even a little bit younger if you consider they're in their mid to late 20s at that point, you know, some 6 years after being national champions in 1924. Well, everybody thought this was a brilliant idea. Much bigger crowd to advertise the four horsemen of Notre Dame coming into town than the you know, 1930 version, which was still a very good team and still a powerhouse under Newt Rockne. But Rockne would coach this team because he was coaching. He wouldn't be exhausted and tired. He would be able to prepare and get his men ready to play this game, he felt. So the promoters got the Polo Grounds and expected at least 55,000 fans to pack the stadium on that December 13th game and raise $100,000 or more for those affected by the lack of work in New York City. Now, the game had a twofold impact. the community's help in raising money, and the game held at PAC Polo Ground raised a significant sum, ended up being over $115,000 for New York City's relief efforts, providing crucial aid to the unemployed residents struggling during this economic hardship. It also was boosting the NFL. It showcased the professional football that ended up the Giants soundly defeated those Notre Dame All-Stars 22-0. The Giants helped alleviate and elevate the reputation of the young NFL. It alleviated the notion that they were inferior to the college game. This win against the college powerhouse demonstrated the growing skill and professionalism that the league had established 10 years now into its existence in the eyes of the public. This event not only brought much-needed financial assistance to a struggling community, but it also served as a significant moment for the NFL, solidifying its place in American sports landscape. Big step for the NFL. The Giants and Tim Mara really took a big gamble, and it was to help people. They weren't doing it for their own elevation, but it ended up having a great two-prong attack and did both. Raised money for those who needed it and helped the NFL and the Giants to be established as a powerhouse. Well, the Great Depression undeniably left its mark on American professional sports. It forced teams to adapt, paving the way for some of the most financial strategies of all time to keep teams afloat. And fan engagement and tactics used today were established in those years. So sometimes that dark cloud and those sour lemons can be turned into, you know, a nice silver lining to the cloud, or make a nice glass of lemonade. And that's what Tim Mara and Mayor Jimmy Walker did in the Giants, of defeating powerful Notre Dame's All-Stars and elevating themselves to a better spot. That's our Giants history for this week. We're glad you could join us. We hope you join us for more football history all week long. We have quizzes and all kinds of different things on our YouTube channel. Our podcasts are Pigskin Dispatch on your favorite YouTube, or sorry, are on YouTube, but your favorite podcast provider. And pigskindispatch.com has articles every day that you'll enjoy too. So plenty of ways to enjoy it. Till next time, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you got to do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.